We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Command Center podcast, home of the biggest edge in Dynasty fantasy football. My name is Travis May, and I am joined by my favorite co-host, Curtis Patrick. He is the Dynasty coordinator at RotoViz. I am the Devy coordinator at RotoViz. Basically, what we do is we handle all things college, NFL draft, and Dynasty and things like that for RotoViz. We're going to be tackling a whole bunch of fun stuff this summer and already have some this spring with a bunch of these rookies, but we're going to continue that because the NFL draft is just about a week away. And last week, if you were with us, we pumped a few running back one candidates, but this week it's all about top wide receivers and what they can possibly do to solidify their first round rookie draft status and who we think might actually be the wide receiver one based on some comps or their production or whatever else we found about these guys. But first, Curtis, NFL draft is, you know, next week. By the time this show is out, it's actually probably going to be less than a week away. What are you doing to prep for it right now?
I'm just trying to figure out who's actually going to watch this thing with me. There's been so much, I guess, chatter about some of the fantasy or skill players dropping out of the first round, and that the first round, that primetime event, might be a little bit boring for fantasy owners, dynasty players. And I'm hearing a lot of people saying, I'm going to go to the movies that night because a certain big flick is debuting next Thursday.
Whatever that is.
To compete. Who plans this stuff? Seriously.
They didn't.
They clearly didn't. You don't want to take on the NFL in primetime. But anyway, in all seriousness, very, very pumped. Even if no fantasy prominent players went in the first round, I would still love the event. I love that it's the red carpet with athletes, and I get so excited about thinking what these young players, what must be going through their minds when their name's called, and they got their whole life ahead of them, and they're achieving these goals. And I love hearing the backstories and seeing the families, you know, with the kids in the green room. So just very, very pumped for the NFL draft. And as somebody who's been trying to evaluate and do my best job of sorting these rookies into the different tiers and assigning these different values of where I want to take them, this is the payoff. This is what all the work's been for. How good was your prep? How good were you at projecting where these guys will go and drafting them in dynasty leagues that select before the NFL draft? So very, very pumped. If you can't tell, it can't get here fast enough.
Oh, I know. And the fact that it's in Nashville and I get to be here, and the main stage is legit like a mile from where I work. And I'm actually taking off work to go to some of the festivities, actually going with a former co-host of mine, Justin McCaslin, who's coming in to town. So that's going to be a blast, just kind of hanging out all over Nashville, going to a bunch of fun stuff, and maybe trying to run a 40 just to see how slow I've gotten over the years. So we'll see how that goes. I don't even really think I want to know, but I'm just going to park in my, you know, work garage and head downtown and hang out there basically all day. So yeah, just can't wait.
I demand video of that 40. I will put my best broadcaster voice on and give the play-by-play. But tell Justin he's got to get some video if you decide to take that on.
Yeah, if I decide to take it on, I'm gonna wear like my old cross country shorts, like get some get some cleats or something. I wouldn't. If you're gonna do something, you got to go all the way. So.
Yeah, aggressive stretching routine.
Oh, yeah. Super aggressive.
All right. Hey, before you tease the episode, I do want to give a second shout out to the band that recorded our new intro track. It's the Gigamen. You can follow them at Gigamen Official on Twitter. These guys are great. They cover old Nintendo Entertainment System. That's the original NES from the 80s. They cover old games in their soundtracks, but they metalize them and make them high energy and transferable to the year 2019. So we've got some tunes from Mega Man 2, one of my all-time favorite games, as our intro track. So thank you to the Gigamen.
Nice. I mean, metalize, that should be an album or a band, and just in general, like the name right there. So metalizing, that's word of the day
here. Free idea.
Yeah, there you go. Whoever's listening, if you got a metal band, there you go, it's free. We might charge. But anyway, so one thing I want to kind of talk about before we really jump in and take a look at these guys is one thing I've noticed, and you probably noticed the same, Curtis, over the years, Dynasty takes on these wide receivers and real draft takes on wide receivers can sometimes be very different pre-draft. And they kind of somewhat meld together because of, like, we build so much emphasis is surrounding, you know, actual draft capital with these guys. So, you know, they kind of mesh after the draft. But it's so interesting to see some polarizing names up at the top. Like, you know, we've loved N'Keal Harry, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, and even, like, Kelvin Harmon and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and even, you know, recently Hakeem Butler. For a while now, as a dynasty community, but then, you know, the real draft people want to pump Marquise Hollywood Brown as potentially the wide receiver one, and we're like, hold up, that would be a historical outlier, blah blah blah, all these production metrics that actually matter, but obviously don't necessarily matter to a bunch of NFL draft analysts that are heavily influenced by film analysis and things like that, or even Miles Boykin, who's getting hype lately. So we'll probably get to some of these guys, but I really just want to talk about the why some of these guys might hit and the why behind who they comp to tonight. And so really looking forward to tonight's discussion, because I think the real draft capital is going to paint a little bit clearer picture for us, but I don't know what it actually needs to happen to make any one of these guys a wide receiver one, because there's so many guys that are in the conversation for real draft and dynasty draft purposes. It's just a weird class given the depth. But Curtis, before we jump into that and get deeper into that, how about a word from our fantastic sponsor, the FFPC?
Okay, Travis. Well, our friends at the FFPC are the world's largest dynasty league commissioner, and they have brand new startup dynasty leagues forming right now at $77 and at $250 annual entry fees. You can play PPR, standard rosters. You can play Superflex. You can even play Dynasty Best Ball. They still have just a couple orphan teams left, and they've severely discounted those teams to ensure ownership occurs quickly. If you're ready to draft in some redraft best ball leagues, FFPC has you covered with drafts filling daily starting at just $35 each. Go to myffpc.com. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. And just a reminder, all new subscribers to Dynasty Command Center in our Slack get a $35 league credit applicable to any Dynasty League fee, $77 or higher. I'm doing three Dynasty League startups on the FFPC platform. We just added an FFPC channel in the Slack. It's going to be a major part of what we're doing moving forward. So join myself, Travis, Ryan McDowell, TJ, and the rest of the gang playing on FFPC.
Yeah, man, FFPC is just, it's continuing to grow, just blowing up. So I can't wait to see what the future holds there for them and for all of us that are going to be playing there. But let's jump into N'Keal Harry, because that's been the Devy and Dynasty darling of wide receivers, really ever since he kind of came on to, into our consciousness as a freshman at Arizona State. He's got the size, he looks, he's got the muscles, he's got the breakout age, he's got a bunch of things going for his profile. So I'm curious, last week we kind of, talked about production and some comps for players. What kind of draft capital for N'Keal Harry does he need to be, the wide receiver one or to project well for the NFL for you?
Well, one of my favorite tools over the last couple weeks to do this type of analysis has been the RotoViz Box Score Scout, because the Box Score Scout takes into account college production and some of the combine athletic measurables that that we got back in Indianapolis. So it paints a good overall picture of what a prospect's profile is. And then you can assign draft capital to those things. I think most of our listeners kind of know the history of the production and the athleticism for these players now. So when you go around, when you go into that tool, the Box Score Scout, and you start assigning different draft capital, it takes basically until like the fifth round for N'Keal Harry's comps to become gross. In other words, I mean, just from a profile perspective, he's basically invincible. I mean, if he goes, I really don't see any scenario where realistically he's dropping beyond round two. And so if he is in round one or round two, he's basically a draft with confidence guy. I think that's why so many have kept him atop their dynasty rookie rankings throughout the process, even though different guys have popped up as kind of the flash in the pan name of the week when we've got a new measurable or an interview or new coach saying that they like this player. N'Keal Harry has been there all along, and he's really deserving of that. The age 19 breakout age and everything that's happened after that, very, very deserving of that number one spot that so many have given to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's almost no questions in his entire production profile. If you want to look at sticky metrics that mean something, I mean, if you look at draft age, well, he's going to be a plus there. If you look at his dominator rating, well, he's going to be a plus there. If you look at, what we've recently kind of found out more about yards per team pass attempt, touchdown per team pass attempt, even for like players that have already made it to the NFL, he's above average there. Just go down the line, check that box, check that box, check that box. There's so many meaningful bits of information in his profile. It's hard to assume he's going to miss. And if he's invincible, I it's hard to say that he's not the wide receiver one. Is he your wide receiver one pre-draft right now? Because I know it's kind of changed for me, and I know it's changed for you. Given this information that you just shared, would he be your one?
Yeah, he is. There was a slight period of time after the combine where I had kind of changed how I had players ranked in my top tier, but I've settled back on Harry, which is where it all began. And it's just not going to change at this point as long as he's drafted inside the first two rounds. I'm not going to flinch. I mean, you can put me on the record.
Yeah.
If he goes before the end of the second round, he's staying number one wide receiver on my board. And just to kind of illustrate how invincible his profile is, let's say the unlikely happens and he slides to the end of the third round. This is still his top 10 comp list with end of third round draft capital. Kenny Golladay becomes his number one comp, followed by Alshon Jeffrey, Allen Robinson, Mohamed Sanu, who, even though that's not a name like the three above him, still been a very productive player over the course of his career.
Oh, yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster, Amara Darbo, first kind of blemish there, Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, and then Farrow Cooper and Cody Latimer rounded out. So basically six smash comps, even with late third round draft capital there for N'Keal Harry. So I don't think there's much else to say.
Yeah. The film people don't necessarily like a few things, and then they try to pick Harry apart. And no player is perfect, but Harry answers just so many questions. It's hard not to have him atop your list or very, very near it. But let's move on to another guy I know a lot of people like. Some people I've heard that, worry about his game against, you know, in terms of press coverage. He doesn't have a whole lot of reps there, whatever it is that people don't like about A.J. Brown. But I really like A.J. Brown. I feel like just from what you can glean objectively from film, he's a pretty safe option as far as route running goes and his usage inside and out and being even more effective on the outside than his teammate DK Metcalf. But where would he have to go in terms of draft capital or even just landing spot for you to kind of usurp Harry or maybe just maintain that either or kind of wide receiver one tandem, 1A, 1B situation with Harry?
It's given the discussion that we just had on Harry, it would be very difficult. I mean, yeah. Harry would have to basically slide out of the top two rounds. And A.J. Brown probably has to go to a desirable landing spot in the first round. I mean, I think he's going to need the draft capital advantage over Harry for me to change my mind. And a couple teams that have been rumored to be sniffing around this player are the Colts, have been rumored to have some interest there. That's interesting to me because he would be able to mature behind T.Y. Hilton and not have to be the guy right away. Colts can continue to be a high-volume passing offense with Andrew Luck just entering his quarterback prime in his early 30s. So that would be interesting to me. But that's probably about the only scenario. Maybe if Pittsburgh, A.J. Brown, you know, with the thicker build, maybe he'd be a fit in Pittsburgh. So first round there could also be interesting. But to actually usurp Harry, unlikely. I do have Brown as my number two. Yeah. And as long as he is insulated from a slide, that probably does not change either.
Yeah, and I think he has to be top two, top three for me. And I think most people have him in that conversation. He's been rising slowly over the past few months as people have taken a closer look. And again, I want to reiterate, he's not just a slot guy. If you look at his usage, his percentage usage this year, obviously part of it was just by necessity, but you know, when DK Metcalf went down with an injury, but his splits in the 8-game sample that I took a look at, and I kind of ran this down a little bit more in depth in the the rookie guide that we put out, and third volume is actually going to be dropping here soon. But he was, you know, about 40% slot right, about 20% slot left, about a third of the time left wide receiver, and a little bit sparingly at right wide receiver. But he does a lot of things well. I mean, if you like film analysis, he's a fun guy because he does everything. But outside wide receiver, his deep in routes and even his post game is a lot of fun. And he's not just the in routes and out routes that he can do from the slot. There's a lot more to him. But from a metric standpoint, his profile is definitely not as strong as Harry. But I really like Brown, and so I hope he gets the draft capital that he deserves. And if he is a first rounder, I'd have to say he's an absolute lock for top two, top three wide receiver in this class. But his teammate, DK Metcalf, what happens to his profile if he's not, like, let's just say, a first round pick?
DK's comps get pretty darn ugly if he's not a first round pick, and really not even just a first round pick. He basically needs like the top 10 to have good comps in terms of the box score scout. And you know, this isn't the be all end all tool. It's a good tool. I really like this tool, but to even get somebody like Sammy Watkins in as a comp, you know, he's going to need that top 10, top 15 draft capital. Otherwise, it starts to pull in these players who are uber athletic that were drafted later. The box score scout loves to bring Chris Conley up in the conversation for DK as soon as we get him out of the first half of the first round. So, and I think that's honestly fair. What we're saying about DK is he's big, he's strong, he's fast, and even if his technique isn't on point, who can really cover that? If he can stay healthy, he's just going to be able to bully people.
Yeah.
He won't have to be perfect. But if some of these wide receivers that are more skilled go above the incredible almost historical level combine performance that Metcalf had, that would start to raise into question, I think, how NFL teams are valuing that, or really it almost implies the importance that they're assigning to the technical skills of the players drafted in front of him. And so it starts to bring in a lot of different questions in the narrative of maybe why he would slide. So I've got to see, really got to see top half of the first round draft capital for DK for him to have, I guess, maybe any chance of overtaking AJ Brown. We've kind of locked in and said Harry and Brown are 1-2 here. If that's the next question you want to ask, DK's got to have that top half first round to even have a chance.
And, you know, we're not discounting the fact that that might actually be deemed likely by a lot of people. I think a lot of people think there's a good chance he's still going to be an early first just because of that ridiculous size speed combo. And so if that does happen, I think that he's going to be in the conversation for the wide receiver one overall if he's a top 10 type guy, just because of people's, you know, they love the safety of that top 10 pick. They love the ridiculous athleticism that he brings. They love the pictures that were posted on Twitter and Instagram for weeks at a time of him just being a ripped human being. But the film is a little bit, I don't know, it depends on who you ask, really. Because if you want a guy who runs a route tree, then that's not your guy. But if you want a guy that beats press coverage and gets vertical and just destroys people and bullies them, he's your guy. So he's a mixed bag. He's a boom bust type player. I don't think he's going to have much of an in between to his career. He's either going to become an absolute freak or he's going to completely flame out. I don't think there's really going to be much in between there with DK, but I hope he succeeds, because he would just be incredibly fun if he dominates similarly in the deep game and maybe develops something else somewhere along the line too. But that's interesting that his comps get basically gross outside the top 10 picks. Another guy who's kind of, you know, just leaped into the forefront of our minds and really lots of big name analysts are saying that Hakeem Butler is worthy of our adoration and is perhaps one of the best profiles of a wide receiver in recent memory. But as far as his breakout age goes and in terms of, being productive at an early age, that didn't exactly work out. But I think this may be common knowledge to some people who've been really following along throughout the rookie draft season. But if you haven't, Hakeem Butler, I mean, his story is kind of not typical for your usual wide receiver stud. Like DK Metcalf and AJ Brown and even N'Keal Harry were, you know, 4 or 5-star guys coming out of high school. They followed a very normal trajectory in their college career. But Hakeem Butler, his story, I mean, it was kind of weird with his high school production, because actually his mother passed away when he was in early high school, and he ended up moving to Texas, and because of transfer rules, he ended up not being able to play varsity football until he was basically a senior. And because of that, obviously you're not going to get the same looks from recruiting circle. So he actually had to kind of settle in at Iowa State and was redshirted because, I mean, let's be frank, he was probably incredibly raw. And then by the time he actually came in and got some production, Allen Lazard was already kind of the established 2-year starter and star on the team. So he wasn't really given a huge opportunity. But when he finally was, he had an absolutely ridiculous final season with Iowa State, posting a 43% dominator rating, which is just incredible. We would like to see that earlier at RotoViz or anybody that really pays attention to breakout and the importance of breakout age. But really, his final season numbers from a yards per team pass attempt, for touchdown per team pass attempt, virtually everything that is shown to have a pretty good statistical, like, positive score for NFL success, it checked everything at the last second. So I wonder, though, if you kind of put him into the box score scout, regardless of, obviously, it won't account for this context that I've just kind of shared, but what does he look like if he drops to like round 3? Because I know he could be a late first, he could be a mid second, but we really don't know because he just kind of vaulted up into this discussion this spring. So what happens to his profile at various ranges for you?
Okay, so the bottom line is Butler needs to be drafted in the top two rounds to have even a mixed bag group of comps here. Because if he goes to round three, his closest three comps, no matter what I do in round three, Amara Darbo, Cody Latimer, or Darius Stewart. I mean, insert like... puke sound effect, because you couldn't come up with a group of bigger whiffs. And I guarantee among listeners, all of you liked at least one of these players when they're coming out. Darbo, Latimer, and Stewart definitely had their share of fans. But, you know, if he goes, let's say, by the middle of round two, so like pick 45, we can get some glimmer of ceiling into his top 10 comps. Michael Thomas shows up as number three, Sammy Watkins as number six. So you get a little bit of hope there, but still you're pulling in other names like Pharaoh Cooper and Terrence Williams in that data set as well, even in mid round two. Yeah. So for me, the context is important, and I can appreciate, you know, a later breakout because a player was raw. I mean, we make that excuse for, you know, players converting to tight end all the time. Seems like that's the position where we make this excuse most often, but you know, within that context, even if he was raw, he was still a big, fast dude that should have been able to get on the field no matter how raw he was. I mean, his first year there, he was redshirted. The team's wide receiver, too, was Quentin Bundrage. I've never literally heard that name before until I did this research. And he did not, you know, he didn't claim the market share lead until you mentioned Alan Lazard. I mean, Alan Lazard was a fine college player, but the reality is he's an undrafted free agent in the NFL. Okay, so he put up production in the weak Big 12 because he was the de facto wide receiver one, not necessarily because he was an amazing talent. And Butler still, it took him, you know, until Lazard's gone to claim that role. So you could almost make an argument that, you know, he was slotted into a market share friendly role on a team in a weak conference, and that he's better than Alan Lazard. So if he's better than Alan Lazard, then that means, you know, the bar is somewhere above undrafted free agent. So, you know, I'm not saying that's what I think about Hakeem Butler.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, he clearly pops for anybody that wants to watch him. But I think, you know, it's a big leap to put him over some of these guys who have the early breakouts in more difficult conferences who we don't have to make the excuses for. And so if Butler doesn't get that top 64 billing, going to be harder for me to keep him in the second tier of my wide receiver group.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think that you would assume he should be able to break that given what he was able to do in this final year and given the buzz here recently. But if he does miss that, that's incredibly alarming. And there's going to be one or two of these guys that do just miss on draft capital that we thought were going to get it. So hopefully he maintains that top two round draft capital. Otherwise, probably a red flag for Hakeem Butler here in the very near future. But before we just jump into any more names and talk about even a few of the guys that, you know, real NFL guys, like maybe more so than us nerds behind the microphone here, let's hear a word from our other sponsor, Yahoo Sports.
Okay, everybody. Well, this is the year to begin your Yahoo DFS journey. The Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports platform is unlike what you'll see from the other big box brands. Their GPP contests have max entry limits of 10 per player, and their quick match feature pairs up users with similar experience and win-loss records to ensure you'll never go head-to-head with people that are much more skilled than you at DFS. There's not going to be sharks gobbling up your head-to-heads unless you want them to. The lobby's always full of baseball, basketball, hockey, and my personal favorite this time of year, PGA DFS contest. You can try your hand at Yahoo DFS with $25 free on us just by using our promo code VIZ25. That's VIZ25 with your first deposit. Go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy today to start your journey. You could be the next big winner.
By the way, that reminds me. How did you do in that PGA contest? Did you actually enter in? Did you win all the money, or did you let everyone take it from you?
Those are off the record matters, my friend.
I was trying to trap you.
For real, Matt Jones, lead PGA writer for us at RotoViz. His models just smash. I will say that. You are going to want to read his free PGA content, for Yahoo, every week. It's must read if you're going to give this a shot.
Nice. That's good to know. Cause I'm not the expert. If you want to listen to prime PGA expertise, that is not me. I can name probably, 10 golfers and I would not be able to pick them out by their headshot picture. But that's okay. That's not my specialty, but that's not why you're listening to the podcast. You're hearing all this information from us because you think we know what we're talking about when it comes to the NFL. But speaking of that, Hollywood Brown, Marquise Hollywood Brown, cousin of the Antonio Yellow Mustache Brown. People like him a lot in the NFL. I've seen some pretty big, longtime NFL analysts putting him as the wide receiver one. And really, they've been doing that for months now. Here at on this podcast and really on Draft Twitter, where we like to pick apart his weight maybe his breakout age because he played JUCO for a bit, College of the Canyons, and we make fun of that. But can we really keep ignoring him if he gets... Let's just say he's the wide receiver one in the NFL draft. He's taken first, ahead of DK, ahead of Harry, ahead of Brown, ahead of Butler, ahead of all these guys that we think we know are really good. What happens then to his profile?
Well, we talked about this a little bit before the pod. You know, where do we think he would actually need to go to actually be drafted first? So that's going to mean, DK is going to slide a little bit. And we came up just with around, number 20. Well, if we give Hollywood Brown... draft spot of 20, hit the ceiling comps in his top 10 are really tantalizing. In particular, Brandon Cooks, I think feels like a player that you can squint and see there. Odell Beckham Jr. shows up in that top 10. You also get Will Fuller and John Ross, who hasn't broken out in the NFL, but I think from a size, skill set, and draft capital, it makes sense to see him showing up there. So if Hollywood does get the early to mid first round draft capital, whether he's wide receiver one off the board or not, the ceiling is kind of tantalizing. He would be rewriting the books in terms of what we think about wide receiver weight. There's been volumes written about why he weighed what he weighed. At the NFL Combine, and that's probably the lightest he'll ever be. And I get some of that, just like with Akeem Butler, there's context to everything. And personally, I haven't got a chance to talk about Marquise Brown much, but I love his edge. I mean, he doesn't play like a player that weighs 170 or less. He plays like he's 30 pounds heavier. And he doesn't run around like he's that slight. I mean, he runs around like he's the big dog.
Yeah,
and I think he has that same type of swagger that his big cousin has. And so that's what I like. I think that he's going to be a guy that if he hits, he's just going to really hit. But there's a chance he's just J.J. Nelson. And that's scary.
Yeah.
So it never feels good to say, I trust this guy to be the first person ever to do this thing. It's like if you don't like the idea that Kyler Murray is 5'10 and that keeps you from ranking him as your QB1, there's a lot of arguments as to why maybe you should ignore that height. But that's not a terrible argument for avoiding putting him at QB1 just because you look at NFL history and look at what we've got and you just can't find the comps. Well, we can't find the comps for Marquise Brown at his size. That tell a story that we would want to hear. He's going to continue to be just a very divisive prospect even after he's drafted. I think that you're going to see rookie drafts where he's going to go in the top five in a dynasty rookie draft. And I think there's going to be drafts where he, isn't even selected in the first round, even if he's drafted this highly. So, what do you think about some of those comps and what would you do with Brown if he went in the top 20?
I think I would have Brown everywhere if he went in the top 20. just because of what we know about the importance of just draft capital by itself. But then if you look at all of his other production metrics outside of maybe the perfect breakout age, but if you include, let's just say, one season of his JUCO production, that kind of cleans that aspect of his production profile up a bit. Really, it's just size. For most people, it's really just size, because if you look at his balance to his profile as far as a route runner, he checks all the boxes in terms of versatility there. His yards per reception and just efficiency at all levels of the field, it's inarguable. Like, he's really solid at playing football. Like, it's just by every measure, he does a bunch of things well. I think it's just the historical hit rate that we don't like. So if he gets the capital, which is probably the stickiest bit of information we have to go off of in what we do, I have to say a lot of people are going to overlook him, and I'm probably going to, he's not going to be my wide receiver one, but I'm going to nab him in the late first everywhere if he ends up top 20. But I don't know what else to do with him, really, besides just kind of just say it's really just that he's small. And that's really all we have to go off of that really is negative. The rest of his profile is fine. Do you have anything besides his size that you really dislike?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the foot injury.
Yeah, the little that's true.
I don't like that at all. For a player that's going to depend on his footwork for his separation. I mean, the people that are lauding him are doing so because of his route running and that he's a technician. He's got the speed, but he's also a technician. And so, you had that midfoot fracture coming into the league. I don't like that. It's another question. So yeah. I'm not saying he's in a void for me.
No.
And I agree he could become a target if he gets the draft capital, but that's basically, that's the variable that I'm solving for at this point. Cause if he drops into the second, there's other guys that I think don't have the body questions for me. And if he drops into the second, that almost, to me, that tells the story more of a player who's seen as he can take the lid off of things for us, but not necessarily a feature of our offense. You know, and that, I think that's what a second rounder really signifies.
Completely.
If you're bigger, you're maybe a possession guy, you're a chain mover for us. If you're smaller, you're a field stretcher. If you're going to be featured, you're going to get that first round draft capital is the narrative I prescribe to. So that's what I'm looking for with Hollywood.
Yeah. And one of those guys that doesn't necessarily have size concerns at all, that you actually like and really have ranked pretty highly, even among other fellow Dynasty Command Center rankers for quite some time, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And he's getting some buzz here lately from even some Pro Football Focus guys and some other people that tend to know what they're talking about with wide receiver analysis. So J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, besides having a really long name, what else is cool about his profile if he does check, this coveted draft capital that we keep alluding to?
Well, first off, with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, what I really like is that the things that he's good at, he doesn't just hang his hat on that. He continues to train and improve in those areas. I mean, if you read what his practices looked like last year, everyone knows he was going to get the ball if they were down near the end zone. Well, they would just straight up tell the defense, we're going to throw it to J.J., and they double cover him, and they drape both guys on him, and he'd still have to go get that ball. And that's how he has become kind of the contested catch king. And that's one of his signature things. But kind of all along, he's just reminded me of maybe a slightly budget version of Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is our box score scout agrees. So if you look at his top 10 comps, let's give him like mid second round draft capital, like top 50. His number one comp, actually, DeAndre Hopkins. You get Leonte Carew, Cortland Sutton, Justin Blackmon, Juju Smith-Schuster, Traquan Smith, Anthony Miller, Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, and James Washington. So, I mean, that, we've kind of got, Blackmon looked good before he fizzled out of the league. Out of that group, the only player that we can really say just never ended up hitting is Leonte Carew, because the jury's still out on a couple, and we've got a couple smashes. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Evans, I'll take that comp list all day from a player that we're taking in the second round here.
Yeah, those guys are okay.
Yeah, just okay. It's not like they're dynasty cornerstones or anything.
No.
So yeah, plenty to like here when we look at his profile in comparison to other recent prospects.
Yeah, I think it has a much better, I mean, you got to kind of squint with these, Stanford wide receivers and even tight ends, like just wait, that's a good production profile. Like, cause they just, I mean, it's not always the healthiest passing game. It was kind of this past year, a little bit better, but J.J. Arcega-Whiteside does do a lot of things well, even from a film perspective. It was weird that he really couldn't turn towards the sideline. That was the funny thing about his game. He didn't really run out breaking routes. I mean, really, he does a lot of the same routes that even like a Hakeem Butler does in his game. So I like those comps, and I like his production profile quite a bit. Really, so I don't really have a bunch of JJ Arcega-Whiteside questions if he is drafted inside the top 50. If he's you know, around three guy, I'm not very excited, and he's not even close to wide receiver one. But if he's a first rounder, which I've seen a couple projections of him sneaking into the first rounder, I think he begins to be in that mid first round rookie range. And I think for me, he's probably, even if he's just 50th or so, he's probably still a first rounder. For me, is he a first round pick for you right now?
Yeah, I think he's in consideration at the 1-2 turn. He needs to be in most formats. He could move toward the front of my second tier wide receivers. He could even leap DK Metcalf if we had a situation where if he went in the first round, or if Metcalf slid. I mean, that's how much I like JJ Arcega-Whiteside. I mean, he could easily end up, I guess, as my number three or number four overall, depending on what happens in the NFL draft next week.
For sure. And a few other guys that I know have been kind of buzzing lately, that the real draft folks tend to like more so than some production profile fans and things like that, people that don't subscribe to just film analysis as their go-to for ranking these prospects. Miles Boykin is a guy who's kind of been standing out like crazy. Deebo Samuel is still getting pumped as a potential round one guy. Paris Campbell even got mocked in round one in a couple spots. These guys don't have perfect profiles, but Miles Boykin, I was just joking with Curtis. I actually have an old Debbie share of Miles Boykin. People forget, but he was actually a really highly touted recruit coming into college. He just happened to sadly go to Notre Dame, where wide receivers who want a decent production profile have to just give up on that and just hope that they have decent traits enough to get a look from NFL scouts. But I'm questioning the just late last second buzz from Boykin just because of his incredible combine performance. Where would you, I mean, if he does surprise us and goes, let's just say top 50, is he going to be somebody who just jettisons up your board, or are you just kind of probably not going to have much of Boykin this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a player I'm gonna reach for. I did select him. I had a draft 2 weeks ago, and he had slid to the early third, and I traded up on the clock to take him at 301. I mean, he would become a guy that maybe would warrant like mid second round consideration, but mm-hmm. even if we give him top 50 draft capital, his comp list, not too impressive. You do get a name like Chris Godwin, you get Mike Williams out of Clemson, even though there'd be such a disparity in draft capital there.
Yeah,
there's some weight similarities and some final season production similarities there a little bit. But just a really mixed bag. You get Dante Moncrief, Latimer, Treadwell, Darbo, Josh Malone, Chris Conley. You're squinting to see the ceiling there. Yeah. So I think with him, it's not even just going to be the draft capital. You also have to take into account team situation. Is he going to realistically be able to be one of the top two, wide receiver target getters on that squad? Who's the quarterback? Is it an offensive coordinator that's going to scheme for him, or is it a run heavy scheme where they're just going to have him, running streaks all day?
Yeah.
I think a lot of probably NFL context is going to be important to really truly understand Miles Boykin's dynasty upside here.
Yeah. And it's just kind of a huge question mark. I know you like Paris Campbell and Deebo Samuel. If those guys go first round, do they have to be first round picks in rookie drafts too?
I think they're 1-2 turn guys. I think neither one of them, I don't think either one of them is an NFL wide receiver, like team wide receiver one.
Yeah. Same page. I don't see that either.
I think like Deebo with what he's good at, I think like a smash outcome for him would be like what Cooper Kupp has done so far. Working the middle of the field, finding those open spots in the red zone, being a target down there. I think he can put up some early production. Paris Campbell, not only is he going to need the draft capital, he's going to be a team situation guy. Imagine Paris Campbell and Kansas City Chief Red and Tyreek Hill suspended for the year. Okay. So that would just have me salivating. But stick Paris Campbell on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Whew.
And I will cry myself to sleep every night until his first contract is up. So I really do love Paris Campbell. I think that he's being overlooked. I know that, you know, the film heads don't like that, you know, he didn't run the full route tree and that, you know, he didn't have many targets down the field. I get it. But I've watched every Ohio State Buckeyes game that he ever played, and he played the role in the offense he was asked to play. I mean, it's the same thing that we could have said about Curtis Samuel, who ended up with the draft capital. Same offense that Michael Thomas did not have the huge production numbers in. I mean, Paris Campbell, his numbers this year, he had the best numbers ever by an Urban Meyer wide receiver in that role when Meyer was coaching a Power 5 team. So look at Meyer's Florida and Ohio State careers and all the players who have come out of those systems, high draft capital guys. Paris Campbell's season was the best of any of them. And he still has the ability to run the ball, weapon in the return game, although he didn't do it as much in his final season. So I really like this player, and I've even got a side bet with Kyle Francis from in the Dynasty Command Center, and said that he would be a round two pick. This is way back in like December, January when we're doing volume one. And I'm feeling pretty confident about that 50 spot coming my way. So I'll be shaking Kyle down at this point next week, I think, for that payment. Be ready for that, Mr. But anyway, Deebo and Paris, plenty to like there. I think they're round one, round two guys. I don't know that either one of them could do anything to break into like maybe like my top eight.
Yeah.
So they're really just, they're like 9 to 15 range. And I don't think much would change that unless they really slid in the draft.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this week's episode. We'll try to get one more in before the NFL draft here for you guys. Definitely check out the rookie guide. The third edition is going to be coming out here very soon after the NFL draft. Going to have just tons of good stuff. You can check out the first two volumes that have already come out. You can actually get your copies over at dynastycommandcenter.com. But Curtis, thanks again for joining me this week, as you have for every week for a bit now. And you can, all you listeners can find Curtis on Twitter at CPatrickNFL. I'm Travis May at FF_TravisM. And thanks again for joining us for another Dynasty Command Center podcast. And until next time, keep living that dynasty life.
They call you the Grill Master. You've seared the thickest porterhouse in the butcher shop. And as you lift that first forkful to your mouth, you savor the moment. To get amazing offers during the Mercedes-Benz summer event, like the 2019 C-Class sedan and GLC SUV, the perfect recipes of driving performance. Plus, you can enjoy 6 months of Sirius XM All Access included. The Mercedes-Benz summer event, now serving limited time offers on a select lineup of vehicles. Offers end September 3rd. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
The Gap Factory Labor Day Sale is happening now. Hurry in for the best deals of the season. 40 to 75% off everything. Plus doorbusters August 30th through September 2nd only. Tees from $4.99. Logo styles from $16.99. And jeans from $19.99. Shop in-store today at Gap Factory or at GapFactory.com.
They call you the Grill Master.
You've seared the thickest porterhouse in the butcher shop. And as you lift that first forkful to your mouth, you savor the moment. To get amazing offers during the Mercedes-Benz summer event, like the 2019 C-Class sedan and GLC SUV, the perfect recipes of driving performance. Plus, you can enjoy 6 months of SiriusXM All Access included. The Mercedes-Benz summer event, now serving limited time offers on a select lineup of vehicles. Offers end September 3rd. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.